This is a league that's had Popovich and Steve Kerr in so many moments after Trayvon Martin, after all these other events that have happened. They've been out. They've been public about their concern. They have led the way. So I don't want the NBA to lose that position and lose any of the momentum. And they have proven that in season and out of season, people look to the NBA and the players in the league and say, what do you think? Because they respect their position.
Last week, it seemed like the NBA was headed towards a smooth restart. Then, news broke that a few players, led by Nets star Kyrie Irving, were pushing back, raising questions about the plan and whether it would detract from the social movement against racism. Today, Brian Windhorst tells us what went down and explains why the league's path to coming back, already a tall order, just got a bit more complicated. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, June 15th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Mina, how are you?
Well, confused, because last week when we talked to Zach Lowe, we seemed to be on track for an NBA restart in late July. The players' executive committee and board approved a plan from the league. We were talking about the format, 22 teams, the bubble or the campus or whatever you want to call it. Everything seemed sewn up. Then on Friday, everything changed. What happened?
Well, Kyrie Irving and a number of other players encouraged there to be a discussion amongst players before anything moved forward.
Brian Windhorst is an NBA insider for ESPN and host of the Hoop Collective podcast.
This was outside of the union. It was sort of an ad hoc group of players who organized the call relatively quickly. And although there are a number of concerns from players about starting in the so-called bubble in Orlando in a few weeks, Kyrie is sort of the voice of a movement that believes that with all of the societal challenges we're having and the way that there is such intense focus on the troubling police brutality that has been going on, the such important protests involving Black Lives Matter, that it may not be appropriate to focus on playing NBA basketball right now. And I do think that there are a number of players in the league who feel that way. In fact, Dwight Howard released a statement to CNN over the weekend, basically ratifying what Kyrie said, which was that he didn't feel comfortable playing basketball right now. The reason this is it's challenging is because a week earlier, Kyrie, serving in his role as vice president of the Players Union, was a part of a group that voted to move forward with the bubble planning as a member of the union with the league, which the union did so. And so Kyrie's sort of change in heart has really thrown a measure of doubt into whether more people will follow him and this becomes more of a movement within the NBA.
I want to talk about all of the points he and Dwight Howard and some of the other players have brought up, and then the players who have countered those points. But first, Brian, I want to ask you, why wasn't there a full vote amongst the players? Because I understand that was also a point of contention on Friday.
So it is actually not required within their bylaws. Organizing a vote is challenging, especially with the players decentralized without being with their teams. And Michelle Roberts, who is the executive director of the union, spent the week leading up to that vote talking to assembled groups from every team. Now, it was incumbent on the players themselves to join these conference calls and to educate themselves. And then there was a proxy vote taken by the union representative of every team to sort of speak for their team. So there was a vote per se, but it wasn't a man-for-man vote, which was not required by the union bylaws. I will point out that the union rep role is not a role that is valued by many teams. There are five rookies who are union reps. There are six second-year players who are union reps. By telling you that, you can, you know, sort of surmise that it's often given to a player without seniority who can't say no. That isn't to say that those players aren't really interested in union activities and won't move on to become union leaders later in their career, but it is not something that is known to be a high priority for teams. And so I suspect that, you know, the union went ahead with its process and moved forward. And when players started getting details, and we also saw things changing within the country with the increase of the protests, that maybe there was sort of a rising of opinion, which hadn't been there as the process was playing out as scheduled.
Some of these reps, you know, as you mentioned, don't have seniority, but Kyrie Irving does. And Brian, you've been around him for a lot of his career. You've covered him closely. Now, as you said, he is not the only player raising questions here. Dwight Howard did, also former player Steven Jackson, who was friends with George Floyd and has been very outspoken on police brutality in recent weeks. He's added his voice to this.
Now ain't the time. Playing basketball is going to do one thing. Take all the attention off the task at hand right now, what we fighting for.
But Kyrie has become the face of it. How do you think that's been received around the league, the fact that he in particular is the one leading the charge?
Not very well. Kyrie often speaks very thoughtfully, but often is unfocused. It's not unusual for Kyrie in one conversation to go down four or five different avenues of thought, each one of them unique and interesting in its own way, but a little scattered. You know, to know Kyrie is to understand he is a complicated person. I will never forget the day that I spent with Kyrie in Cannonball, North Dakota, last summer, when he became a full member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, as is his heritage. And he received his Lakota name in a naming ceremony. He was named Little Mountain, where there were tears streaming down his face and his sister's face as they went through this ceremony, and he spoke from the heart about the importance of embracing his Native American roots. He's obviously spoke from the heart about embracing his African American roots. He is a person of depth and character. But I do think it's turned off some players that the union worked for weeks very diligently and under a lot of pressure to put together a deal that really does benefit many of the players. And Kyrie was a part of that, ratified it, and then so quickly changed his track. I think that part of what's going to happen in Orlando will take into account the concerns that Kyrie and Dwight Howard and others have raised.
I was intrigued to see Dwight Howard in particular speak up. His statement said, "I would love nothing more than to win my first NBA championship, but the unity of my people would be an even bigger championship." Brian, Dwight Howard is on the Lakers, the number one seed. So when he says, "I would love the opportunity to win my first NBA championship," that is quite realistic. He's also a teammate of LeBron James. Have you heard anything about how James, who ostensibly wants to play out this season for a competitive reason, and some of the other superstars have responded to this news over the last few days?
LeBron is a firm believer in using the platform that basketball brings to affect change. We have seen what he has been able to do for at-risk children, especially in his hometown of Akron, Ohio, through initiatives that he's led. He is now leading a new initiative aimed at addressing challenges to voting in lower income and African-American communities. His track record would tell you that he believes that something can be done with the platform that is afforded to the teams in Orlando that could be potentially a lot more valuable than any message that could be sent by boycotting and not going back to play.
Do you anticipate that we'll hear from Chris Paul, the leader of the union, soon?
But I think Chris Paul has sort of let the union's activities speak for him. At some point, he is going to address it. But I really do think, Mina, the union has done a tremendous job of driving a deal, if I may be so coarse, that really is to the benefit of the players. Number one, they have been able to save potentially $650 million in salaries that would have been lost had the season been canceled. And I know that it can be maybe focusing on actual dollars when there's so much important things happening can be a little bit offensive, but it is not meaningless. He's negotiated the ability to get players' families tested in addition to the players when they are there coming back. So Chris Paul and the union have worked very hard here, and I think you will see them continue to try to do that.
All right, on that note, after the break, let's talk about that plan and what it might entail. We're presented by Marathon. Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we're aware travel may not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop into the car to run an errand. Or maybe you just want to drive to see your best friend, simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's also quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. So, Brian, while the players are deep in conversation and potentially divided about whether to come back and under what conditions, the league is busy hammering out the details of this 22-team restart in Orlando. Now, there's eventually going to be a giant document with all the safety protocols, logistics, information on life in the bubble. Who is working on this and how far along is it?
So the NBA has basically got a COVID czar. His name is Dave Weiss, and he has spent his entire life dedicated to this for the last 4 or 5 months, even before the NBA stopped. Dave is the point man on this, and he has sent dozens. I think the memo that went out about testing that I obtained last night was the 54th memo that he has sent out just during the hiatus. And there was, I think, half a dozen or so memos he sent out before the hiatus. And they have really worked with epidemiologists and the people at Disney to figure out how to do this. And Mina, it is going to be really challenging. They really want to keep the number of people in the bubble to about no more than 1,600. And that includes 35 people per team, 17 players per team, 15 on the active roster, two what are known as two-way players, sort of like minor league players that can be called up in the event that one of the players in the front line, frankly, gets sick with COVID or gets another injury. 18 staff members, which coaches, trainers, security guards, team managers, things like that. Then there will have to be, a bunch of people to run the games, referees, people to run the scoreboard, people to ball boys to take care of the courts, the TV people. The league has decided that they want a pretty robust television product. They could have gone with as few as 5 or 6 cameras and sort of made this look like a local high school game, but they are going to use for the national TV games, I have been told, over 20 cameras. This is going to be a major production. For the players, that means that they could go 7 weeks, which would be through the regular season games, through the training camp, regular season games, and the first round of the playoffs, which is going to last roughly 2 weeks, before they are allowed to see their friends and families, or, to be quite blunt, their significant others. 7 weeks, basically, by yourself. And the league, in an attempt, I think, to kind of moderate that a little bit, has told them that they will not do recreational drug testing. So marijuana, in short, marijuana has been decriminalized in the NBA during this time. They will do testing for PEDs and for drugs, what the NBA terms is drugs of abuse. But basically they're telling the players, look, we know this is going to be tough. This may be one of the coping mechanisms you may elect to use.
There are so many jokes in my mind right now that I feel like I shouldn't make. setting that aside, what's the latest on testing?
The provisional concept is that players are going to be tested every day. The thing about it is it's not just tested every day. As you can imagine, you know, the most effective test is the nasal swab, which requires a very long swab to be stuck far up your nose, deep into your nasal cavity, where the virus tends to collect. It's very uncomfortable and certainly not something anybody would want to sign up for potentially 90 consecutive days. So the plan right now is to use a less invasive test, which is not always as accurate. But the idea is that by testing every day, they will be able to catch it. And then there will be several layers of protection, certainly social distancing, certainly mask wearing, temperature taking when going in and out of buildings. And then the league has had to come up with protocols. You know, for example, what happens if a player hurts his knee and needs an MRI and he needs to leave the bubble to go to the hospital? What happens if a player has a family emergency? There are a number of players who have wives and girlfriends who are due to give birth during this time. The unfortunate irony of this is when you can do family planning, a lot of times players will plan to try to have children after in the late summer and early fall, which is their downtime. Well, guess what? Now that's heavy work time. So if they have to leave, what is the protocol for coming back in? Can they immediately come back in? Do they have to wait for a number of days? Does there have to be a certain amount of tests? It's the complexity of all of these layers is crazy. And then there's another thing which is uncomfortable but true, which is the people at Disney World who are taking care of the players, the people who are cooking their food, people who are washing their towel, who are cleaning their rooms. What layers do they have to go through? How are they tested to make sure that they are not bringing the virus into the bubble? This has been a beast to try to figure out, and it will not be perfect, and in times it will not feel fair, but they really are trying to do the best they can to continue this season, not only to save potentially billions of dollars in lost revenue, but also to engage the fan base and give so many of the people that desire NBA basketball something to enjoy.
What is the latest on sort of the, I guess, dialogue around those older coaches, right? Greg Popovich, Mike D'Antoni. Is there any hesitation around letting them, I guess, just be at the games?
Right. Well, you know, the NBA cannot bar them. That is an EEOC violation. You cannot say to somebody, you can't come in here because you're too old. You cannot work because you're too old. The NBA is very concerned about that, and I understand. When I spoke to some of the top epidemiologists in the country about this very issue, especially this one woman who I respect immensely, she said that it's just one simple question to ask yourself. If your father was going to do this, would you want him to do it? Do you feel safe if your father, who's 70 years old or whatever, would want to do this? That's a very simple question with a complex answer. But what they are going to do is they are going to have an independent medical panel. So not the NBA's doctors, not the team doctors. We're going to review the medical records of every single person going in the bubble, and they will receive some feedback on the dangers. You know, there, you know, one of the things about pre-existing conditions is asthma is a pre-existing condition. If you have moderate to severe asthma, you potentially could be at severe risk of really dangerous complications if you get COVID. So you think about great healthy NBA players, but a guy like James Harden, has asthma. JaVale McGee has asthma. DeAndre Jordan of the Brooklyn Nets has had issues with asthma in the past. That is a risk factor. There's also the possibility that players who don't understand that they may have high risk or any sort of risky pre-existing conditions could be briefed by this by these medical panels and said, hey, you may not know this, but because of condition X, you should be aware that you are in some more danger. We could see players not show up, and it could be because of political reasons. It could be because they feel nervous about the concept in general, or it could be because they have conditions that the public may not even know about that makes them susceptible.
Well, what happens, Brian, if a handful of players don't show up?
NBA provisionally has told the union that if a player is deemed healthy and elects not to come into the bubble, he will not be paid for those games. He essentially will have his pay docked. Now, he won't be penalized in any way, such as an additional fine or any sort of discipline, but, you know, losing the game check is a huge penalty.
So what are the next steps here in this ongoing sort of back and forth between the players, the league, the players, and the other players?
First off, the league has definitely they've heard what Kyrie and other players have voiced. They are obviously, their eyes are wide open about this scenario that is enveloping our nation and the heightened awareness and the heightened focus on the systematic racism that we are dealing with and confronting as a nation. And they are working with the union to find ways to use the attention that is going to be put on them as they go to Orlando and have nightly national television audiences to leverage that. But the other thing that has to be done, Mina, is that all of the players have to get tested within the next 7 to 10 days before they even get to Orlando. That testing is going to begin on the 23rd, a week from Tuesday. And Mina, I would expect there's going to be positive tests there. There are going to be players and staff in all likelihood who test positive before they even get into the bubble.
So you and I are talking today. It's Sunday, June 14th. As of now, Brian, compared to last week, how likely do you think an NBA restart is?
I do think it's likely. I do think it will happen. I recognize the real importance of the players' sensitivity towards playing basketball with what's going on in our country. I still think the majority of NBA players feel like playing basketball is the right thing to do for a number of reasons. If there's going to be something that stops this, my guess on June 14th is it would be the rising number of cases that we are seeing in the country, and particularly Florida. But there is so much invested in this, and there is a belief from the top epidemiologists that this bubble can work if operated well. Will they be able to operate it well? That's yet to be seen.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, how negotiations between MLB and the Players Association have run afoul. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. Over the last few weeks, we've been covering the back and forth between MLB and the Players Association, with one side offering a deal, then the other countering, and so forth. Well, it appears the negotiations are over, because on Saturday night, after MLB countered last week with a 72 games at 70% prorated pay proposal, the PA's executive director, Tony Clark, issued a statement that read, "Further dialogue with the league would be futile. It's time to get back to work. Tell us when and where." Now, this spurred some hand-wringing over the weekend, with fans fearing it would mean they would get no season at all. But what it really signifies is that the most likely outcome now is that the league will set a schedule, as both sides agreed to in March when they struck a deal agreeing they'd get full prorated salaries. What they didn't know back then, of course, was that this much time would elapse, and that those prorated salaries would likely be paid out over something like 50 games. The union, which told baseball to inform them of their plans by close of business today, won't necessarily take this lying down. It's plausible that both sides might file grievances over the final arrangement, though according to our Jeff Passan, that doesn't mean baseball won't be played. It does mean the bad blood won't subside anytime soon. In response to the union this weekend, MLB issued their own statement arguing that the PA was refusing to negotiate in good faith and that players seemed to believe that they deserved, quote, virtually all the revenue. Meanwhile, the New York Post reported this weekend that the league and Turner Sports agreed to a new $1 billion deal. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.